first source, to free its satisfaction effect from suppression and to reinforce the satisfaction springing from the other source. Hence emotions in the dream appear as though formed by the confluence of several tributaries, and as though overdetermined in reference to the material of the dream thoughts. Sources of effect which can furnish the same effect join each other in the dream activity in order to produce it. Some insight into these tangled relations is gained from analysis of the admirable dream in which non-vixit constitutes the central point. The expressions of emotion in this dream, which are of different qualities, are forced together at two points in the manifest content. Hostile and painful feelings, in the dream itself we have the phrase, seized by strange emotions, overlap at the point where I destroy my antagonistic friend with the two words. At the end of the dream I am greatly pleased, and am quite ready to believe in a possibility which I recognize as absurd when I am awake, namely that there are revenants who can be put out of the way by a mere wish. I have not yet mentioned the occasion for this dream. It is an essential one and goes a long way towards explaining it. I have received the news from my friend in Berlin, whom I have designated as F, that he is about to undergo an operation, and that relatives of his living in Vienna would give me information about his condition. The first few messages after the operation were not reassuring and caused me anxiety. I should have liked best to go to him myself, but at that time I was affected with a painful disease which made every movement a torture for me. I learned from the dream thoughts that I feared for the life of my dear friend. I knew that his only sister, with whom I had not been acquainted, had died early after the shortest possible illness. In the dream, F. tells about his sister and says, in 3/4 of an hour she was dead. I must have imagined that his own constitution was not much stronger, and that I should soon be travelling, in spite of my health, in answer to far worse news, and that I should arrive too late, for which I should reproach myself forever. This reproach about arriving too late has become the central point of the dream, but has been represented in a scene in which the honoured teacher of my student years, Brucker, reproaches me for the same thing with a terrible look from his blue eyes. The cause of this deviation from the scene will soon be clear. The dream cannot reproduce the scene itself in the manner in which it occurred to me. To be sure, it leaves the blue eyes to the other man, but it gives me the part of the annihilator, an inversion which is obviously the result of the wish fulfillment. My concern for the life of my friend, my self-reproach for not having gone to him, my shame he had repeatedly come to me in Vienna, my desire to consider myself excused on account of my illness, all of this makes up a tempest of feeling which is distinctly felt in sleep, and which raged in every part of the dream thoughts. But there was another thing about the occasion for the dream which had quite the opposite effect. With the unfavourable news during the first days of the operation, I also received the injunction to speak to no one about the whole affair, which hurt my feelings, for it betrayed an unnecessary distrust of my discretion. I knew, of course, that this request did not proceed from my friend, but that it was due to clumsiness or excessive timidity on the part of the messenger. But the concealed reproach made me feel very badly, because it was not altogether unjustified. Only reproaches which have something in them have power to irritate, as everyone knows. For long before, in the case of two persons who were friendly to each other, and who were willing to honour me with their friendship, I had quite needlessly tattled what the one had said about the other. To be sure, this incident had nothing to do with the affairs of my friend F., nor have I forgotten the reproaches which I had to listen to at that time. One of the two friends between whom I was the troublemaker was Professor Fleischl, the other one I may name Joseph, a name which was also borne by my friend and antagonist P., who appears in the dream. Two dream elements, first inconspicuously, and secondly the question of F.L. as to how much of his affairs I have mentioned to P., give evidence of the reproach that I am incapable of keeping anything to myself. But it is the admixture of these recollections which transposes the reproach for arriving too late from the present to the time when I was living in Brucker's laboratory. And by replacing the second person in the annihilation scene of the dream by a Joseph, I succeed in representing not only the first reproach that I arrive too late, but also a second reproach which is more rigorously suppressed, that I keep no secrets. The condensing and replacing activity of this dream, as well as the motives for it, are now obvious. My anger at the injunction not to give anything away, originally quite insignificant, receives confirmation from sources that flow far below the surface, and so become a swollen stream of hostile feelings towards persons who are in reality dear to me. The source which furnishes the confirmation is to be found in childhood. I have already said that my friendships, as well as my enmities with persons of my own age, go back to my childish relations with my nephew, who was a year older than I. In these he had the upper hand, and I early learned how to defend myself. We lived together inseparably, loved each other, and at the same time, as statements of older persons testify, scuffed with and accused each other. In a certain sense, all my friends are incarnations of this first figure, which early appeared to my blurred sight. They are all revenants. My nephew himself returned in the years of adolescence, and then we acted Caesar and Brutus. An intimate friend and a hated enemy have always been indispensable requirements for my emotional life. I have always been able to create them anew, and not infrequently my childish ideal has been so closely approached that friend and enemy coincided in the same person, not simultaneously, of course, nor in repeated alterations, as had been the case in my first childhood years. I do not here wish to trace the manner in which a recent occasion for emotion may reach back to one in childhood, through connections like these I have just described, in order to find a substitute for itself in this earlier occasion for the sake of increased emotional effect. Such an investigation would belong to the psychology of the unconscious, and would find its place in a psychological explanation of neuroses. Let us assume, for the purposes of dream interpretation, that a childhood recollection makes its appearance or is formed by the fancy, say, to the following effect. Two children get into a fight on account of some object, just what we shall leave undecided, although memory or an illusion of memory has a very definite one in mind, and each one claims that he got to it first, and that he, therefore, has first right to it. They come to blows, for might makes right, and, according to the intimation of the dream, I must have known that I was in the wrong, noticing the error myself. But this time I remain the stronger and take possession of the battlefield. The defeated combatant hurries to my father, his grandfather, and accuses me, and I defend myself with the words which I know from my father. I hit him because he hit me. Thus this